You're listening to the Makers and Mystics podcast. This is season 13, episode 8. This season on the podcast, we're discussing the topic of community and culture. And in today's episode, we're going to share an angle on this discussion, which I think is a vital contribution to our conversation. We're talking about the post-pandemic loneliness epidemic through the lens of music and comedy. My guests today are film director Chris White and songwriter and producer Daniel Smith of the Danielson Family. Chris and Daniel have collaborated on an 8-minute short film music video which celebrates themes of acceptance and community as a cure for post-pandemic loneliness. The film and accompanying documentary features performances by beloved actor and comedian Fred Armisen, as well as Andy Marie Tillman. The song is titled Come and Save Me, written by Danielson, with lyrics by pioneering Jesus rocker Larry Norman. I had the chance to sit down with Chris and Daniel to talk about the concept behind the film and music, as well as the role of the arts in addressing social concerns such as loneliness and isolation. And be sure to see the show notes of this episode for links to watch the film and to connect with today's guests. I'm your host, Stephen Roach, and this is the Makers and Mystics podcast, podcast for the art-driven seekers of truth and lovers of life. Daniel, Chris, welcome to the Makers and Mystics podcast, my friends.
Yeah, thank you, Stephen.
Yeah, this is, I think I told you this the last time I was on the show a couple of years ago for Electric Jesus, but this is like one of my must listen to podcasts. I hear every episode. I have as many questions for you now as you probably have for us. I'm truly a fan.
That's amazing. Yeah, I think the more people listen, the more questions they do have for me, but that just keeps it interesting.
Yeah, hopefully. For sure.
Well, Daniel, it's a real honor to have you on the show for the first time. Chris, of course, it's an honor to have you back on the show. I've had many listeners ask me, why have you not had Daniel on the show yet? And that's now we can finally say we made this happen. I'm so glad you're here.
That's right. Happy to be here. Thank you.
Well, you guys have just been working on an incredible music video, and it's so many different aspects of this that I want to dig into. It's called Come and Save Me. It features Fred Armisen, who's a name that many people will be familiar with. Why don't we start with the 30,000-foot view of this, and whoever wants to take a stab at it first, talk to me about the song and how this collaboration came about.
Well, if you're familiar with Electric Jesus, that's the film that I made in 2021, and Daniel and I collaborated on the music. Daniel made all the music for that movie. The score music, the instrumental music, and the songs, the fake rock band songs. And we were able to, because of Daniel's great relationship with his record label, Joyful Noise, we were able to release a double album in support of that movie. And if it's a double album, you need more music. Then we'll just be in the movie. So Daniel and I just started having fun, like talking about what other songs could be on the record. And Daniel mentioned that he had come across some Larry Norman lyrics. And that led to the creation of this song, Come and Save Me, which is on the record from 2021, Joyful Noise. But we hadn't, at the time, it was just an inspired by the movie kind of, you know, song on the record. But a few, you know, several months ago, well, almost a year ago now, we started talking about, hey, maybe we should make a music video for that song. And what would that be like? And that's where this project began.
And so just for our listeners, Larry Norman would have been an original Jesus hippie kind of guy from the 1970s who wrote a bunch of folk songs that was kind of a pioneer during that time when people weren't really, you know, writing music in that style. Am I correct in that?
Yeah. I mean, people say he's the godfather of Christian rock, you know?
Yeah.
And I saw him when I was 12 years old, and it blew my mind, just the raw honesty and the volume and the intensity of the rock set. As a 12-year-old, it just blew my brain. And having already been a Beatles fan at that age, that I could connect those. And that, even though it's Christian rock, Christian music, in some sense, it's great music. And so he's always been an influence on me. And over the years, yeah, I've gotten to meet his son, and then his brother, and then eventually he somehow found out about Danielson late in life, and he started sending me emails. So we had some correspondence at the end of his life. But yeah, then later I was interviewed for his biography by that was written by Gregory Thornberry, the authorized biography of Larry Norman, and I was interviewed for that. And at the end of that interview, he said, "I have some unpublished lyrics if you want to take a look at them." Yeah, of course. So,
wow.
And this was happening pretty much at the same time that, like Chris said, we were filling out additional songs from music inspired by the world of Electric Jesus, which included some of the other fictitious bands that were just mentioned in the film. So Chris wrote lyrics for those, and I wrote the music for those. And we were having a lot of fun with that. And then this just kind of happened at the same time. Like, okay, well, a Danielson song with Larry Norman lyrics, it's perfect. And but it's in this double album soundtrack, and it doesn't appear in the film. So I think, for me, I'm excited that this song will get some, you know, attention on its own, because it really is, it came from that project, but the song is its own thing.
Dude, well, while we're on the subject of the music for Electric Jesus, let me just say that who knew that you would be such an incredible 80s rocker? And that you could embody that sound the way you did.
This guy right here, Chris Whitener.
Yeah, that's right. But I know you as the guy in the tree with all the nurses on the stage and the bizarre antics that you've performed over the years. But I was like, this is really incredible. And anybody listening can go back. I'll put a link in the show notes to this episode as well.
Great.
A lot of that music is featured in the previous interview with Chris on Electric Jesus.
Fantastic. Yeah. Well, thank you. Yeah. I mean, I'm influenced by most types of music, and I don't really think about categories of music when I'm writing Danielson stuff. I'm just writing whatever's coming out. So it was a fun challenge to have they're assignments, basically, musical assignments. And so I had to go back to my sixth grade brain. And actually, once we started this, I really did just listen to Christian metal, but also all kinds of metal for, you know, probably 2-3 months. That's all I listened to, just to kind of get my head back into that. Not that I was ever a big metalhead, but when I was a kid, I was certainly listening to Def Leppard and Quiet Riot and Twisted Sister and Rat.
Yes. Fun rabbit trail, but Dee Snider from Twisted Sister lives in my hometown now. I ran into him in a coffee shop a couple of weeks ago. It was the most bizarre thing ever. Maybe I'll have him on Makers and Mystics next.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, one thing that I'm really excited to talk to both of you about is the theme that runs through Come and Save Me, because this season on the podcast, we've been talking a lot about community and culture. We've been addressing kind of this post-pandemic world that we're living in, where loneliness really is an epidemic these days. There, isolation and some of the social fracture that happened through the pandemic, we're only just now unpacking some of that, I think. We're only just now seeing some of the effects of that. And it seems like this theme, you guys are really hitting it on the head conceptually within this video. I'd love for you to talk to me a bit about that concept.
Well, the lyric is a place to start if you're a filmmaker maybe thinking about a music video. And the lyric is definitely a plea for help. Come and save me. It, in Larry's conception of that, it's a prayer to God, but it doesn't matter whether you're a Christian or not, we've all asked people to save us, parents, lovers, friends, whatever. So that's a common human thing. But as I was thinking about Daniel and his aesthetic, I started thinking about and watching Jacques Tati, the French filmmaker from the 50s and 60s, is when he was at the peak of his popularity. And Tati is almost like a Chaplin-esque, a silent, he's in the films that he plays, but he plays this isolated loner who's stepping out into the modern world and is baffled by it all. And it's a surrealist, over-the-top modernist world. You know, it's a, if you've never seen a Jacques Tati movie, go to Playtime, you know, jump in and see him. I think a lot of people listening would love it. But that started to be the world. I started imagining the song and that Jacques Tati world. That felt true to Daniel's spirit. And then the other thing that just felt true is over the years, as we've become friends and collaborators, I've experienced the hospitality of Danielson. You know, his first incarnation, the band was called Danielson Family. That's because his family, his sisters, and now his wife, but, you know, that the band was made up of his brothers and sisters. And they are a family. And I have been on the receiving end of such incredible hospitality by the Smith people. Like, their family is just crazy how much they can embrace and welcome you in, and just and then you feel like you're one of them. So the story is all those elements. That's just me processing all that. How can I visualize? I got a little Jacques Tati silent comedy going. I've got a little modernist angst. What are we doing here? Loneliness. How do I connect? And the idea of being brought into the family. And in our story, our person, played by Fred Armisen, he's rescued. He's rescued by community. He's brought in by community in a kind of magical way. So that's how it all those pieces came together. But all this is conversations with Daniel and talking about colors. And, you know, like you're talking about so many things, but over time you start to realize this is the thing we're making. And so it was cool.
Talk to me about this character, Hugo. Who came up with the inception of this guy?
Well, let's get to Fred. You know, the first thing people always ask me, I don't know if they're asking you this, Daniel, is how in the world did you get Fred Armisen to be in this music video? and it's
fair question.
Well, why don't you talk about, Daniel, your experience with Fred, or how you know Fred?
We met him years ago at a festival in England called All Tomorrow's Parties, and it was curated by Shellac, which is Steve Albini and his band. And we were honored to be invited to this festival, and it was the first time we've been in Europe, I think, for sure, first time in England. And we played this festival, and we were backstage, I think it was the night before, and we're watching a band. And Fred was in full character. This is before SNL, so I didn't have a clue who he was. And he was in full character, and just we were just hanging out with him. And he wasn't breaking character. We knew something was strange about this guy, but he was cracking us up, and just we were completely baffled. And then after the band stopped playing, he walks out on stage and introduces the next band. So we realize he's in character, and, you know, of course he comes back and like, who are you? So that was the first interaction. Then he's on SNL and he becomes famous. And then some years back, we were invited to a festival for, a celebration for Steve's Albini's studio, Electrical Audio in Chicago. And so we were invited to play there, another amazing thing. And as we're just walking around the parking lot beforehand, Fred was there he had introduced us the next night back at All Tomorrow's Parties, and he said, "Hey, can I introduce you again for old time's sake?" And we're like, "Yeah, can't believe you even remember who we are." and then during the show, he was just standing right in front of the stage, just staring at us. It was just bizarre and wonderful, and what a cool, amazing person he is. Yeah, so that's some background, just kind of just interacting with him a few times, and then. Had some mutual friends, so I was able to get his contact and just say, "Hey, would you want to do a project with us?" And he said, "Yes." How about that?
Yeah, that's amazing. And so Hugo is kind of the character who's embodying this experience of loneliness, and he's going through trying to find a place to fit in and trying to find community. Is that kind of the narrative?
Yeah. He's trapped and he's compelled. He's in his apartment. He's got his food delivered. He's got everything he needs. He lives on Zoom all the time. You know, it's just meeting after meeting. But he knows that he's alone and he wants to go outside, but he just doesn't. And through a magical circumstance, he's compelled to go out. And as he goes out into the world, he starts realizing he doesn't know how to do it. He doesn't know how to human. He doesn't know how to be a person. And so his first foray into the world is a bit disappointing, almost tragic, and sad that he can't do it. But then through another magical occurrence, he's drawn to a concert venue where this beautiful band is playing a song that connects to him and transforms him. And I should say too, the other actor and one of the other main characters, Andy Marie Tillman, plays this food delivery person, and she's in the beginning and she's at the end. And people probably know Andy Marie from social media. She's a comedian, singer. She's a fantastic artist in her own right, based out of Nashville. But she came down to do this. But it was important to me too that I'm kind of haunted by the idea of these delivery people. I was in New York last month, and they're still everywhere. There's still delivery people on bikes, and how they were kind of like these unsung heroes of the pandemic. We didn't want to go out and risk our lives. We had no problem asking, you know, hundreds, thousands of people to just bring us our food. And one thing that's transformative in the music video is we kind of redeem that person as well. That person becomes part of this redemption narrative and becomes part of the family too. So yeah, I'm excited for people to see it, but it is definitely, I'm maybe making it sound super sad. It's actually hilariously funny because it's Fred, and how can he not be? But there is a dramatic arc to it for sure.
Yeah. And he is acting without words, is that correct? Because this is a music video,
so it's
all through gesture.
Yeah, and he was incredible. We got to witness, Daniel and I just got to sit there and watch him do his stuff. And, you know, what an honor. It was so fun just to work with him and create comedy with him. And he was game. He was willing. He showed up and there he was, and he was ready to go. So it was just a dream come true for sure.
Yes, for sure.
Well, Daniel, talk to me more about this theme. Unpack some of this epidemic of loneliness, and why is that compelling to you as an artist? And, you know, why is this something that you feel is important to unpack today?
Well, relationships have always been the heart of Danielson because we're a family band. And it's also about a spiritual relationship with the Spirit of God, and that journey and that mystery and that, the challenge of listening out for that small, still voice, right? So it just rolled right into this idea that Chris wrote the script for this. And I think just with our background and what I write about all the time is journey and relationships with family, but strangers, you know? And that's the heart of Christ, is the stranger. And that's, there's a lot of that is being talked about in this film, but also there's the power of creativity and the power of music and the power of healing, which is another thing I've always been fascinated with and talk about in songs and the visuals, and it all just kind of comes together in this 8-minute piece.
Daniel and I are both Christians, but when we're creating together, it's almost, even with Electric Jesus, we were like, this isn't going to be a Christian thing. No Christian thing. Like, it becomes almost like a personal challenge to, like, we're not going to make this that cliche Christian thing that people do that doesn't interest us at all.
Right.
And not that there's really much temptation, but it's kind of a joke between us. And I was, you know, I remember watching one of the final edits of Come and Save Me, and just... it spoke to me, like, the thing, it's weird when the art speaks to you, that's new, or that's exciting that happens to it. And I just kind of threw my hands a little, and I told my wife Emily, who produced it, I said, I think this is definitely a Christian thing. I was not trying to do this, but I'm afraid I've now made a Christian film. And but to be fair, I mean, like, all good, great art, it applies to everybody. So, I mean, like, there's plenty of ways to read this that would not necessarily connect to a religious specificity. It is broad, and it's meant to be broad. But I did see what I understand to be the gospel in this film in a way that was just a little jarring when I recognized it being there. That's always a surprise when that happens.
This ventures away from our topic a little bit, but just on the lines of the art that you're making, you know, there can tend to be a pressure that is felt on artists of faith that is our art an advertisement for Jesus kind of thing. And I think that a lot of artists in the Christian sector have felt that pressure in the past. I actually think it's changed quite a bit, which is refreshing.
Totally.
And I love seeing what you guys are doing, where you're creating art out of the abundance of your own experience, out of the abundance of your own interest and curiosity. And by virtue of your own spiritual journey, this is kind of what comes out. And Daniel, something I've always appreciated about your music in particular, as well as the work you're doing, Chris, in your filmmaking, is that you've tapped into these very bizarre, surrealist depictions of spiritual truths. And I think it was Flannery O'Connor who said, you know, if you assume that your audience believes the same way that you do, you can kind of speak more relaxed. But if you don't have that assurance, what'd she say? For the blind, you create large and startling figures. It's almost like she employed exaggeration and the grotesque and these uncomfortable things as a means of expressing spiritual truth. And I just love the way that the both of you in your art making have ventured outside of traditional symbology, traditional depictions, but yet you've come at your art bearing very important truths, such as the epidemic of loneliness, you know, such as the different things that you are conveying in Electric Jesus and in your albums over the years. I wonder if either of you would like to speak into that a bit. As an artist coming from a platform of faith, what is that process like for you creatively to venture outside of, you know, sort of orthodox symbology, but still represent something very orthodox?
I think number one, thinking about who your audience is. So if your audience is, you know, the choir, then you're preaching to the choir. And then if your audience is people who can't necessarily relate to my personal spiritual journey, then that's where I write from. And so I tend to just ignore all of that and then just speak to myself and speak that out loud, right? So it's more of a diary when I write. Now, this particular song, of course, I didn't write these lyrics. I did edit them a little bit. But still, the heart is very similar, where it's a personal, you just be as raw and true and honest I'm talking about me, that I just speak about my journey and speak it out loud and see where it goes. And you know, Danielson has a history of being too Christian for the weirdos and too weird for the Christians. And the people that come out to the shows are these wonderful people that just fit in between that or don't fit anywhere. And that's been over the years, that's been growing and growing and growing. And now I'm fortunate to, in fact, I get to not only meet, but I get to work with people now who are in their 30s and 40s or 30s at least, who were children and saw us play. You know, they were youth group kids and saw us play. And I wasn't interested in being in the Christian market at all. It's just that was the label that we were on. We had one foot in the Christian market and one foot in the indie market. And it turned out to be a really wonderful thing. But yeah, I think just writing, I just try not to think about too many things. I just try to write from a raw place and see. And it's the mystery. We're talking about a spiritual mystery. And we're not trying to figure it out. We're just trying to grab things as they come and just try to put them into words or put them into music or just the feeling of something or just the idea of something or a moment from the day, which is part of a spiritual journey, is each little moment from each day, and just talk about that. And hopefully it connects with people. But there's really no conclusions. Because it's not interesting to present conclusions. Number two, it excludes people. If I'm coming up with conclusions for them, you know, I'm barely coming up with conclusions for myself. So how could I come up with them for anybody else?
Yeah, yeah, it's the problem in that kind of Christian art that does, I think, that tries is selling something. It's just none of us want to be sold to. We're constantly being sold stuff. Even if you're just scrolling on your phone, you're being sold stuff. And I think that was an approach that maybe that became a lot of the American evangelical expression in the past 50 years was, this is a thing. And, you know, it's like, you need to buy it and assent to this. And so naturally, as that music industry developed on the heels of that and with that and lockstep with that, it was also selling. And it wasn't just selling artists, it was selling worldview and specific tenets, things that we would agree upon and share culturally. And that just doesn't work. I mean, that doesn't work for in communities of artists and in communities on audiences that are broad. And I think Daniel and I are both really interested in having conversations with broad audiences that I'm not coming in there with some stuff you got to agree to or buy.
Yeah.
For me to reach you or connect with you. I mean, I'm going to have the same questions you do.
Absolutely.
You know?
And I think good art leaves room for the audience to draw their own conclusions. It was
sure.
Much what you were saying earlier, Daniel. You know, you're not trying to come up with conclusions for other people. You know, you're hanging on to your own conclusions as you're walking through your own process. And I think good art leaves room for the audience to engage it, to have their own experience, and let the art speak to them what it's going to speak to them. I think that's the beautiful thing about both the music that you're making, the films that you're making, is that it leaves room for people to come away with more questions than answers in some respects. And so I can't wait to get my hands on the film and to be able to watch it myself. I believe also I read that you have a 12-minute documentary that's coming out to accompany that. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, while we were filming, a documentary crew was following us around and engaging, and we used some interesting technology. The LED walls that they use, like in Mandalorian shows like that, we were shooting on one of those stages and in my hometown of Greenville, South Carolina. So that was all really cool. So yeah, that comes out. We'll be sharing that on all the Electric Jesus social media. April 19th is when that comes out, a week before the actual music video. But in that, it's kind of cool. They did a great job of telling Larry Norman's story, talking about Daniel's connection to Larry. Of course, Fred made an appearance in it. It's those guys did a great job doing that. I'm really happy we recognize that maybe this is something we should try to document.
Beautiful. Well, I only have two more questions for you guys. And one is just, again, I want to lean back into the subject of loneliness as the epidemic. And I love this conversation today, because through the arts, we're able to bring awareness to something that is a present day concern for a lot of folks that may be still experiencing that. Maybe they're still, I see people all the time, you know, that are still functioning in a very isolated way of being, you know, and I'd just be curious for either of you that want to answer this. What role do you feel like the arts play in helping to address some of the social concerns, such as the epidemic of loneliness that we continue to come back to? And, you know, again, as I mentioned, our subject for this season is community and culture. And whereas we just kind of riffed on this idea of art not being used as advertisements, not drawing conclusions. However, at the same time, the arts really can be a vehicle for discussion. And I'd love to hear either of you just kind of riff on that and how the arts can lend to this conversation.
I still have such beautiful memories, moving memories of the first concert I went to after the pandemic. It was in Athens, yes. Georgia, and it was Waxahachie. I went and saw that band, and it was just incredible. I was standing, I got there early, went right to the front. I'm standing there at the Athens Theater, I guess, and she starts singing a cappella, and just hearing a voice singing in a room of hundreds. I mean, it was an incredibly moving and yes, God experience. And so that just us being in community, I think we still had to wear masks at that time. And so just to be shoulder to shoulder with those people and looking at that stage was like this, there's something here, there's healing here. And that's also incredibly beautiful, amazing music. You know, I didn't go see a Def Leppard play at the State Fair for my first show back, but it was a very powerful experience. So that to me, that's, I mean, if you have the misfortune of being my friend, or well, the misfortune of me being your friend is you probably are going to get a text from me at some god awful hour of some YouTube video of some song I found. It's great. Like, oh my gosh, have you heard this? I didn't know that Bob Dylan covered Bob Dylan. How did this happen? You know, so to me, that language has always been music. I wish I was a musician. I'm not. I mean, I can write the words for some songs. I can write the words for them. But that is my healing. And I would assume the same is for you, Daniel.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, seeing as much live music as possible. I mean, I appreciate it now more than I have in a long time. And not only are you in the room sharing an experience with other humans, mostly you don't know, there's a chance you can interact, you know. And then also, mm-hmm. I think I'm still, I still feel like there's a theme in my life of reconnecting with folks I haven't spoken to in years. Like that just continues to happen. And it's the right thing. And it's not necessarily anything that I'm like seeking out to do. Although now that I've identified it this past couple of weeks, like now I'm seeking out people who I haven't spoken to in a while. But there's been definitely a theme of like reconnecting with friends I haven't seen in 15 years. And we pick up where we leave off. And I taking it really seriously. And I think now trying to be even more deliberate about doing that more.
You know, Stephen, in the video, I was thinking that it's easy to say to somebody who's suffering and is alone, like, get out there, go on, you know, get out, get outside, go grab a beer with a friend, whatever. That's the easy thing to do. The hard thing to do is to go to that person and say, come be with me, come join me. I'm going to take you, join my family, join my clan. That's often the last thing I want to do. I just want to preach at people and say, you know, get out there and meet somebody. Well, maybe they're supposed to meet me. And that comes as, you know, so I think it goes both ways. And I think that comes across in the video. There is a thing where Hugo is stepping out and becoming, you know, trying something. There's also a way that Danielson is accepting him and asking him to join. Both things are necessary for community and love to be shared.
Well, Daniel, I just wanted to ask you really quickly before we get off the air here, what's next for the Danielson family, or what's next in your world?
Well, I do have something exciting that I can't talk about yet, but it's going to be announced soon. Okay. So we'll have to talk about it in 2 weeks. You'll know about it. But new Danielson music. So that's the goal. That's I've been dusting off piles and piles of lyric books and facing my fears, and it's a really exciting time. That a bunch of things all kind of coming, merging and coming together at the same time. It's hard to not think something special is happening.
Amazing. Well, listen, I just want to say that I really honor and respect both of you guys. I'm really appreciative of the work you're creating, of the artistic expression that's coming from your collaboration, as well as what you're doing independently. And man, I hope to connect with you guys more in the future. Thank you so much for being on Makers and Mystics with me.
Absolutely. Thank you for saying that. Look forward to the next time.
Thank you for listening to the Makers and Mystics podcast. This episode was produced by me, Stephen Roach, with music provided by the Danielson family. If you've been inspired by this podcast and want to contribute to the production of these episodes, or if you are an artist seeking meaningful community on your spiritual and creative journey, I want to invite you to join our creative collective at patreon.com/makersandmystics. We'll see you again next week, and until then, keep creating. The world needs your art.
Who hears 12 and under?